Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the very last day of May, Anno Domini 2025, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Hang on, I can't hear you. My earphones aren't in yet.
That's all right. I'm going to apologize to everybody for my voice. It's that season, and the allergies are... You would think they'd be tamped down with the rain, but it's not.
Try working in a store, and they bring in all these plants.
Oh, yes.
My sinuses have been going totally bonkers the past 2 weeks.
Yep.
Ugh.
Well, a massive data breach exposed over 184... Oh, I left off the one on the thing there. 184 million online accounts has been discovered, and experts are calling the stolen information a cyber criminal's dream. The trove of Apple, Facebook, and Google usernames and passwords was found online in an unmanaged server. The mysterious database not only contained secure login data for millions of private citizens, but also had stolen account information connected to multiple governments around the world, linking them to more than 29 countries, including the U.S., U.K., Australia, Canada, China, India, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. As far as the risk factor here, this is way bigger than most of the stuff cybersecurity experts find, because this is direct access into individual accounts with both usernames and passwords. This is a cyber criminal's dream working list. It consists of 47 gigabytes of data with sensitive information for accounts on various sites, including Instagram, Microsoft, Netflix, PayPal, Roblox, and Discord. You've heard us say this many times before, but once again, the best action to take right now is to change your passwords if you use any of these platforms, and also activate two-factor authentication. Also, please don't reuse passwords. Also, anyone who uses the platform should start monitoring their accounts for suspicious activity. That includes watching over emails, banking apps, and social media accounts for changes that you did not make yourself. Apple, Google, and Meta users can also consider freezing their credit and activate fraud alerts on their bank accounts. And by the way, if you use the same username and password on your bank and on your Netflix or PayPal or Instagram or any of those accounts, change it now. Once it was confirmed that the exposed information was genuine, the hosting company where the server was located shut down access to the database. But the data are already out there and being used. Any hackers who access the database before its discovery could use the stolen usernames and passwords to log into accounts, potentially stealing personal data or money. They could have also committed fraud by making unauthorized transactions or engaging in identity theft. The stolen data could also be used as part of a larger phishing campaign, using one person's hacked account to gain private information from other potential victims. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is 184 million Apple and Google accounts exposed. Your choices are already using an authenticator and two-factor authentication, setting up two-factor authentication or authenticator for everything, changing my passwords, and what? Again? So far, we have 26 votes, and not surprising at all, what again is far in the lead. And, of course, you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And then, of course, you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. And, yes, I know I left off the one of 184 million. I will fix it.
So they haven't figured out who collected them. or how long they've been collected from.
Right.
So this may be, this breach may go back years. They don't know yet. So if you've been receiving unsolicited two-factor authentication prompts, someone's been actively trying to get into your account. That was one of the social engineering breaches a target against Apple and Google last year. Someone has your username and password, but they don't have your 2FA. They will call you up, spoofing the call ID, saying, "Hi, we're Apple. We're going to send you a code to verify your account."
Right.
And the only thing they're lied about is they're not Apple. They do send you a code to verify your account. You get it. You give it to them. They break into. Now they don't have to break into your account. They're in your account and start buying everything up on your money.
Right.
So you know, if you get a two-factor prompt and you aren't actively logging into that service right now, say no and change your password
immediately.
Yep.
This is
and in this case, just change your password. Period.
Yeah. Just do it anyways.
Right. And I know it's a pain in the patoot to change passwords on all your systems. Oh, well, the other choice is losing your identity or losing money.
Well, that's
you choose which of those two things you want.
Since
and it doesn't matter if you don't have any money. I got $10 in the bank. They'll steal that.
Yeah.
They'll use your identity to get a credit card, $500 credit card. Any bank will give you a $500 credit card.
All you need is a name.
Yep.
Since I have used EnPass, I have not had one password breached because of the way EnPass makes the password so complicated, nobody's going to breach them.
The problem is, in this case, the usernames and passwords are already in a database. It doesn't matter if you've got a 200-character password.
It's the other end has been breached.
It's the other end that's been breached, and your 200-character password is in that list. So they could just grab, Dave Enright and the 200-character password, and get into whatever account that's associated with.
So that's why
no way to fix that. You have to change your password.
Yeah, but I mean, again, EnPass makes it so easy just to make up another complicated password. It's not you got to sit there and, for the next hour, sit there, try to figure out some other combination. You go into EnPass, say, generate a new one for me. Maybe even make it a little more complicated.
Right.
And paste it in there. Boom.
The one thing that I have found over the years, and we've talked about this before too, is when you tell people, you need to make a password, you know, they can give you a username, they can give you all the information when you say, okay, it's time to set a password, deer in the headlights.
Yep. Oh.
Every single time. Here, all you do is go to EnPass and say generate.
And you can move the slider to how weak or strong you want it.
Yeah. Yeah. What really angers me is I set up something, and the maximum password length is 100 characters. Why are you limiting me?
My bank did that.
I had one the other day where it was 10.
That's ludicrous.
Yeah. My bank did that for a little while. I called and complained. It was like 2 weeks later. All of a sudden, they opened up the field and made it. You can put whatever size password you want in there.
Yep. All it is a line of code.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous to limit that. I get it. Back in the day when we had 4-bit computers, 8-character passwords made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we had legacy systems based on Fortran, 8-character passwords made less sense, but they still kind of made sense. They don't anymore. They simply don't.
Mm-hmm.
Any place that limits your number of, I get it when they say there are certain characters you can't use. That I do understand. Those characters are being used as flags or whatever. Yeah. I get that. Absolutely get that. But other than that, come on.
Yeah. I mean, again, the combinations, if you ever, have EnPass create a password, even if it's 120 characters, and they have it show it, and look at the variety of upper and lower case and punctuation and all that, and you look at that and they, nobody's going to be able to grab that one.
Right, right. Right, except if it's already in a database.
Yeah, that's the exception. But so, what I'm thinking of is I didn't have to spend a lot of brain power coming up with that combination.
Right. So the moral of this story, ladies and gentlemen, is change all your passwords. And I know most of you aren't going to do it. I get that. But if you're not going to do it, at least pay attention to your accounts. You know, look who's using your PayPal account. Look who's using your Netflix account. You know, Netflix is cracking down on multiple users on an account.
Disney is too.
And Disney is and all the others. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you've got two machines in your home or three that use the same account, they're coming off the same IP address. Netflix doesn't care.
Yeah.
The assumption is you go from room to room, you watch it here, you watch it there. But if you've got two different addresses, in particular in two different cities,
even more,
you know, they're going to crack down on you, and then you lose your privileges because you weren't paying attention.
But doesn't a family member, aren't family members allowed, say, if you got a kid off in college?
If you're paying for the service.
Well, it depends on their terms of service.
Right.
A lot of times it's per household.
Right.
They're not in my household anymore.
Right.
They might be my family. Because, you know, I've got, 400 cousins I could share because they're my family.
Right.
No. It's
no, I'm saying if you had a couple kids off of college, you know, two different colleges.
No, and I get that. And that depends on the service.
Service, yeah.
Some will let you do that. Some will not. So when my daughter moved out of our house and went to college, back in the day, Netflix didn't care. So she continued to use our Netflix account. Mm-hmm. Now she lives in her own house. She's got to have her own Netflix account. That's just simply the way it works now. And I don't particularly, and I've told her, I don't particularly care to lose my Netflix account because you won't pay for it. She's got a better job than I had.
I know a guy that he used to auction off his extra Netflix accounts at the end of the year. So it used to be when you get a Netflix account, it's you and you can have five logins.
Right.
So he'd use one. He'd auction the other ones off for the, you know, he'd end up, you know, people would pay him $15, $20. So he got that four times. So he'd make $100 to pay for his own Netflix account and some extra cash on the side. We hated him.
Yeah.
But now Netflix doesn't let you do that anymore. It's based on the IP address of your
home. Right.
So I've seen it on YouTube TV when we were traveling, and I log into my account. It says, oh, you're not in your home location. Have you moved, or are you on vacation? So I could say I'm temporary. Okay. So we'll give you a week at this location, and then...
Yep. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Doug from Holly, New York. What's up, Doug? Doug? Hi.
Here. Hello. I read something online just recently, Elon Musk coming out with a tablet, and I'm just wondering, and I'd like to hear your comments. I'll hang up and listen. Is this something that's real, or is it just some AI BS?
Tablet from who?
Elon Musk. Why would Elon Musk release a tablet?
Yeah, no.
Completely no, fake. It's not real. It's
that's AI.
Particularly if they were asking you for money or saying get in quick, join us the pre-sales or whatever. Right, it's a scam.
Exactly. Okay. And I kind of was wondering, they did quite an elaborate presentation
on
the tablet itself and its functions and how you would link it with Starlink and all those benefits. So I was just kind of curious. I figured you guys would have heard something about it if it was real.
We're seeing it now, and they're calling it the Model Pi.
Correct.
I'm not seeing it from any reputable news agency, though.
Yeah, that's why.
Shocked the entire world who thought it was a joke. This is the most powerful iPad ever. No, it's not. So maybe it's the screen in the new Teslas.
I believe that's what I'm looking at here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just kind of curious.
If you're looking at a cheap tablet, you can get Amazon Fire tablets pretty cheap.
I have a couple of iPads. Been a strong Apple user for years, and one of the headlines in this article was it was going to be an iPad killer.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's how you know it's hype.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
All right, thanks, Doug. Yeah, everything that I'm seeing online is that it's the new screen.
Yeah, it's nothing from any reputable news agency.
Right.
And it looks like it started last December, just in time for Christmas.
Yeah, it's clickbait, clearly clickbait.
A Tesla phone and a Tesla tablet? No.
People aren't buying Teslas. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're burning them up pretty good.
Yeah. They're burning themselves up pretty good, too.
Well, that's how they're trying to generate more sales. You know, you buy a Tesla, get a free phone.
I would think it would be the other way around.
Yeah.
Buy this phone, get a free Tesla.
Free Tesla, yeah.
They've certainly got the back stock. Sitting out in the desert.
Did you see the post? It might come from you. They found a use for all the Cybertrucks that weren't.
Yeah, the wall.
The wall. Yeah, that's what they made the wall out of.
Yeah, I posted that. So,
I can't tell you anything if you found it first.
Sorry,
he's retired.
He's retired. Yeah,
I'm retired. I see him all day. Look. Generally speaking. If it sounds too good to be true,
it is.
It is. And when you see something like this, particularly if it, every one of the things I saw about it was clickbait. You know, this is the most amazing. Click here to see. You won't believe. Mm-hmm. Seven reasons to buy. Number five will shock you.
Kill all the other things.
Right. It's the iPad killer. It's the this killer. It's the that killer. Generally speaking, there aren't a lot of killers out there.
And AI can write some really good stuff to draw you in.
Oh, boy, can it.
And part of the problem is it was just announced legitimately in major news organizations that Elon Musk is admitting to even more drug use than he's admitted to before.
Yeah.
Especially ketamine and ecstasy and psychedelic mushrooms. And I guess that's what you have to do to deal with politics these days.
Exactly. So it's one of those
we wouldn't put it past him.
Right. But it is from what we've seen so far, and of course that could change. It just looks like hype and nonsense. Tablets. There's really no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah,
you can get inexpensive tablets. For example, Steve mentioned the Amazon Fire tablet. The really cheap ones come with ads.
Right, that you can't turn off.
That
or
you
block.
Cannot
and bloatware.
Turn off.
Yeah, bloatware.
I personally bought a Boox, Poke 5, BOOX, makes a product called the Poke 5. I love it. In fact, it's in my pocket right now. It's a little tablet, and it is e-ink.
Hmm.
So I use it mostly as a reader. Battery lasts days. And if you know how much I read, that would tell you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a full-blown Android tablet. So I can do anything on it. It is black and white only because it's the inexpensive e-ink. And the thing was on sale for under $100, and I can't remember how much. I think the list price is $150. But it was on, it was a first get it now sale thing. I love it. It takes very little time to charge. And because it's e-ink, the way e-ink works, and they have color e-ink now, it creates a page, and then that page holds itself there. You don't have to spend electricity keeping the page in front of you. You only use electricity when you change the page. So when you're reading, the only time I actually use the battery is when I turn the page. Now, again, I read a lot and I read fast, so I do use up the battery fairly well. But I know people who have these, the battery lasts them a week. Now, again, if you use it as a daily tablet, right, and you're using it to do web browsing and all of that stuff, the battery's not going to last a week. But the other thing is, it doesn't have a speaker, so you have to Bluetooth it to something.
Not many paper books talk to you.
Not many paper books talk to you, and this e-ink device, e-book, doesn't talk to you either. It can, only through Bluetooth. Herald Bluetooth, the Viking king.
Yeah.
Who lent his name and his runes to Bluetooth.
Well, united Denmark and...
Yeah, somewhere.
Sweden, Scandinavia united a bunch of tribes and formed a new country.
Yep, and then and they called him Bluetooth because he ate blueberries all the time. Yeah. Generally speaking, you got to weigh what you're getting with what you want, right? An iPad is a top-of-the-line product. And if that's what you want and you can afford and need, good for you. I don't need that. I just want something light and convenient and small and easy to read with. And so the Poke 5 did that for me. I didn't have a problem with that. So get what makes sense to you and think ahead about what you're going to use it for. And how you're going to use it and what you really need as opposed to what you want, and then decide where to meet in the middle between what you need and what you want.
It always starts out, I'm going to read books on it. But then, can I play some games? Not really on this one.
Yep. It depends on what you do, but you got to tell them everything.
Yep.
You got to tell yourself everything. I have had people who've done that. I only do this. Plus, I play Fortnite. Wait, hold on. Now we're on a whole new class of computer here.
Yep. You added a third digit.
Yep. Exactly what he did. Fourth digit.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Be careful what you figure out you need. All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nina Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dave from Canandaigua, New York, on the line. What's up, Dave?
Well, just when I thought things were getting better.
Okay, next caller.
Yeah. Well, I'm just curious, can you put a link to whatever news article you got that information from? Will there be a link to that on the site?
Which article?
When you were reading in the opening, you're reading about the breach.
The breach, yes.
Oh, the breach.
It already is.
Yeah.
Steve put that
I went to the source, too. I don't know which article you were using, but I went back to the original.
I melded half a dozen articles.
You guys are way...
I don't just read articles. I meld the information. Yeah. I form it. I mold it.
Uh-huh.
Or I turn it into mold. I'm not sure which.
Yeah. There's only so many ways you can say 184 million accounts breached.
right.
Yeah. I was browsing about, have I been owned or pwned or however they pronounce it. Well, apparently they have not been totally breached, but there's something here. They got fooled by something.
Yeah.
I've just discovered that. So
Troy Hunt, the owner of Have I Been Pwned, he published this whole blog entry where he got tricked, just like we all get tricked, where he coming back from a red-eye flight, he's jet-lagged, he got a message from his mail, a bulk mail provider, saying that his account's been suspended and unless he logs back in. And it turned out to be fake, and so the bad guys got his credentials and within seconds stole his email list, which the whole thing was just automated. And so he wrote a pretty lengthy post about it, and I think I posted that a few weeks ago, where the message was just dire enough that it didn't raise any red flags. A lot of times, the obviously fake messages with blinding flashing lights and voice saying your account's been compromised, those are obviously fake. You know, the more dire they are, the more fake they are. But it was just dire enough that he got caught by it. And then what's interesting is other security people are saying, oh, that would never happen to me. I sort all my mail. And the other guy's saying, yeah, that happened to me like five or six times. Because it's such a common thing to get fake email trying to break into your accounts. It's all automated.
I have had to train myself over time that I do not even look at my email after midnight because I'm tired.
Yep.
I'm not thinking as straight as I could be, and I can get caught.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that's why I have a couple of junk mail accounts. So yep. Anytime I do anything that's, who knows whether I really care or not.
Yeah.
At least when I open up a Yahoo email, I'm pretty careful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, and that's the thing. Email addresses are free. And there's no law as to how many you can have.
So the bad guys do that too.
Right. So I have a couple of accounts at GMX. I have a couple accounts at Duck.com. I have, accounts all over the place that are throwaway accounts. When somebody says you have to sign in to do this, and I really want to do this, I'll use one of those fake addresses, go look at it, there it is. I never look at any other mail there, ever.
Yep.
And, well, I do have one piece of good news.
Yeah?
I don't know if I whined on the show about this, but I have been annoyed to no end at the color of the scroll bars in Firefox. You can just barely make out the slider, like they call it the thumb, I guess.
Yeah.
It's almost the same color as the track.
Yep.
And, I just discovered an add-on called Custom Scroll Bars.
Nice.
Found it yesterday. You can make the colors anything you want, both the thumb and the track. And from what I've gathered, it works in Firefox, obviously. I think it works in Chrome and Edge also. So at least that's some good news for today.
Excellent. Well done, Dave. Thank you.
Yep.
So you can make your scroll bars a horribly ugly color.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. All right. Thanks.
Yep.
Bye-bye. And you know how you can change the color scheme for Windows or Linux or Mac? I worked with a woman once who, you walked by her desk, you looked at the color scheme. If it was green or blue, you could talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
If it was red, keep walking.
Everyone has their own way to show how busy they are.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Webster, New York. What's up, Dan?
Well, I've got two things for you.
Yeah.
First of all, there's another little scam going on that deals with people who claim to be calling from a bank. Their verification office. I've gotten a ton of calls primarily from Arizona, all from Chase, and they're trying to get information from you. So be aware.
Yep. Yep, thank you.
Yep, now the second one. I've got an old Mac here. It's a MacBook Air mid-2012 to 16. my hard drive got some smart errors, and I decided to replace it. And I put in a brand new SSD, and you can't, the Mac doesn't see it. I went into the Distrotel list, and it's not there.
That probably means it's an incompatible drive. What model computer did you say again?
Let's see, it's an A1446.
That doesn't help me. I need to know the name.
MacBook Air,
13-inch, mid-2012 to 16.
They use different drives on those models. There was early 2013, late 2013, early 2015. So there were several different connectors on the MacBook Air logic boards.
Right. And I've got the adapter that's in there, and it worked fine with my previous replacement.
I would return that and get the right drive. I wouldn't try to adapt anything. If Disk Utility doesn't see it, then it's an incompatible drive.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'll return the drive and I'll go hunting.
There you go.
Do you have those drives in stock?
No, we generally order them as needed, and it's getting to be, it costs too much to repair an old computer anymore versus just buying a new one.
Okay.
But probably the best place to get Mac hard drives is a company called Mac Sales.
Okay. I will go there. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
The MacBook Air uses a proprietary blade drive. It's not a standard SATA.
Of course it isn't.
And multiple different models used different connectors.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
The days of being able to work on your own computers, particularly if you have a laptop.
Forget it.
Very hard. In some models, you can replace the drive. For example, in my little Asus that I carry around here. It had a hard drive in it, which was a very slow hard drive. The system is fast. It's an i5 processor. It's 8 gig of RAM, so it's okay. Yeah. But the drive was super slow, and I replaced it with an SSD. Now it boots up in 8 seconds, and it does everything. You know, it's fine. But I could do that on this machine. I could do that back when I was sending laptops to Tanzania and that. I was able to do those. But nowadays, it's difficult to find the right drive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult to do them because so many of them now are either soldered to the motherboard.
Or getting to them isn't as easy. They used to have like a little door that you could get, you know, open up and either add more memory to your laptop or change out hard drives.
Because it's cheaper to build the chips and solder the pieces together.
Surface mount.
The surface mount, everything. That makes the computers cheaper to build and so cheaper to sell, which is what everybody wants. But that makes it much harder, if not impossible, to upgrade anything on the inside.
Right. There are a couple of models of computers that are specifically designed to be hackable. In the hardware sense.
The framework is a big one.
Framework is a big one. They are not cheap.
Yeah.
They are not cheap. But if that's what you want, you can still get it. You just pay for it.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything on the inside is replaceable and customizable.
Yep. And what was there was a phone that was component parts.
Oh, yeah. You could put Moto together. Or something like that.
Somebody made it. You could, you know, decide.
Add this feature or that feature on a camera and all the other stuff.
I don't want a camera, but I want extra RAM. You know, you could change around whatever you wanted. It was a pretty cool thing. All right, let me read the Microsoft news. Microsoft has confirmed that some Windows 11 systems might fail to start after installing the KB5058405 cumulative update released during this month's Patch Tuesday. On affected systems, users see 0xc000098 recovery errors in ACPI.sys, warning that the device has to be repaired because the operating system couldn't be loaded. You can try repairing the installation from a bootable USB recovery drive, assuming you've made one. Otherwise, take it to your friendly neighborhood repair center. There's no official solution from Microsoft yet, and may never be. The Microsoft Authenticator app is now issuing notifications, warning that the password autofill feature is being deprecated in July, which means it's going away, suggesting users move to Microsoft Edge instead. Despite this, PC support personnel across the globe are gearing up for a very busy July. Microsoft has introduced Windows Backup for Organizations, a new backup tool for enterprises that simplifies backups and makes the transition to Windows 11 easier. This is currently aimed at businesses. In a bid to make Windows more like Linux, Microsoft has introduced a new update orchestration platform built on the existing Windows Update infrastructure, which aims to unify the update system for all apps, drivers, and system components on Windows systems. The orchestrator will regularly run an update scan tool supplied during the registration process to discover pending updates. The orchestrator then queues downloads and updates at optimal times to minimize CPU and bandwidth spikes, while also considering user activity, power status, and network conditions. So far, this sounds like everything Linux has been doing for decades. Under this new update model, it will also handle restart requirements, yep, notification deadlines, yep, and rescheduling of failed operations, yep, without requiring developers to build a custom scheduling or logging solution. Given how badly so many Windows updates go, this may not be the great solution Microsoft thinks it is. Are you ready for Microsoft to own all your backups? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. Like I said, given how badly so many Windows updates go, including this month's, by the way, I'm not entirely sure I would be comfortable having Microsoft update every single piece of software and driver and et cetera on my system.
That's why I find so many computers that haven't been updated in years. Literally, years.
Right. And I get it. If you are using plain vanilla stuff, let's say you bought a Microsoft Windows computer and only run Office, and it's generic enough that the drivers are common and well-known and et cetera, et cetera, then yes, Microsoft running your updates is probably an excellent idea. It takes it away from you. On Linux, every once in a while I get a notice that an update is due. I hit a button, one button. And then I just keep working. And then rarely, it then says you have to reboot now. And I can also say later.
Yep.
That was one of those, a press release from Microsoft last week we talked about, wasn't it? Only the updates every third month are going to require rebooting.
Right, right.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that'll happen. Yeah. And you know, when you have... particularly when you have multiple computers, the ability to do automated updates or scheduled updates is quite useful. I mean, thank heaven I'm up until 2 in the morning, because every once a month or so, I check the router, and if there's an update, I know my wife is asleep, I'm not going to bother her. I check the Google TV. And if there's an update, I know I'm not going to bother my wife. And Netflix, all the devices themselves, the televisions, the smart speakers, everything, those things all need to be updated on a regular basis. And if you're not doing that, it's a problem in terms of security. So, you know, set aside a time you can do that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is William from somewhere in Virginia. How are things in Virginia today, William? William?
Nope. Sorry, William.
Sorry, William. Please call back.
Hold on.
It may have. We're going to blame Dave on this one.
And we're going to blame the school's phone system that wasn't designed for a calling
right,
radio show.
Right. There certainly is that. But yeah, the keep all your devices up to date. There's nothing easier for a hacker than an out-of-date system with a known problem that could have been fixed. That was fixed, but you didn't do it. All right.
But the counter effect of that is if I update it now, it's bad and crashes. If I wait a week, they fix it. But if I wait a week, the bad guys attack me.
Right, right. Find your own middle ground and be happy with it.
Yeah.
We're talking to William. Where are you in Virginia, William?
I'm in the great city of Hampton. Mr. Nick, how are you, sir?
Peachy, my friend. How are you?
Never better. Now, my answer to the question, and this is since I now have a dual-booted Lenovo TC,
yes,
is a resounding no.
No.
I don't even have to think about it. I don't have to think about it, you know?
Yep. So what are you booting? You're booting Windows and what?
Ubuntu with KDE Plasma.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have a laptop with KDE on it. I like it. I like it a lot. I'm learning to like it more.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
KDE used to be, has always been pretty. KDE has always been really pretty. But
yes,
it used to be so bloated and so slow. Part of it is the hardware's caught up. Yes. But the other part of it is they rewrote the whole thing a few years ago. And it's much lighter, much faster. Does things really, really nicely now. I'm very impressed by it.
Yeah, but the only reason I even have Windows is because my academic institution requires me to do my classes on it. But I would not back up a lot of my stuff in Windows. I can use Google Drive, and I back up primarily when I'm in Linux.
Yep, yep, yep. People who have tried Linux find that over time they tend to migrate to it more and more and more. Sounds like you're a convert, William.
Oh, since I've been listening to you guys, yeah, no doubt.
That's what we like to hear.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thank you, William. Have fun down in Hampton. I hope it's miserable weather. No, I hope it's lovely.
I heard you, Nick.
Because we're having miserable weather up here. It's raining. It's cold.
No. Really?
Yeah.
This has been the rainiest May on record.
Yep.
Sorry to hear that, guys. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
Yep. Well, yeah, but we got it. So I hope things down there are worse. I mean, better, much better. Thank you, William.
Of course, enjoy your day.
Have fun. We have a lot of people who are learning to dual boot. You got to be careful.
Yeah.
When you dual boot, because sometimes Windows will do an update that kills dual boot.
Oh, geez! Surprise, surprise.
Well, yes, and you know there are those who the conspiracy theorists will jam their tinfoil hats on a little harder and say that Microsoft is doing it on purpose. But yeah, so you have to be a little careful. I've said before that I was a Windows guy for many years, and when I started at RIT, faculty would send me emails and say, "Is this a virus?" Well, don't send it to me.
Yep.
So what I did is I set up a separate machine with Linux on it, specifically to do email, because if they sent me a Windows virus, it did not matter.
No.
And so I used that, and then I found myself doing this and doing that and spending a little more time on it. I got bitten. And I used Linux way back at Yggdrasil, and assuming that's how you pronounce it. And most of the time, installs failed or, you know, updates failed, and it was a mess. But now it's as easy to install as anything else.
You know, you mentioning that brings back the days when we went, the three of us went to an opening with Paula Chapman.
The lovely and talented Paula Chapman. And no, the lovely and talented Dana Ponervis. That's right.
And it was Windows 3.1.
Yep.
And they were rolling that out. It was
that the
thing.
Computer store midnight release?
No, that was 95.
Ah.
But yeah, we were there, and you know, they're sitting there telling all you can do this and all this and longer file names and all this other stuff. We're, I can't wait. And there was a long line for people had to have Windows 3.1.
Yep. Well, as what Steve said when we was it Egghead Software?
Yeah,
Egghead. We did the midnight release for Windows 95.
Yes, that was another one. Yeah,
we made eggs and sausages for people. And they came in at midnight, and every single person, as it was midnight on a Friday night, and every single person who got said, are you going to go home and install it? No, I'll probably wait till Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah.
But you got to get it. You had to get it now, right now, you know, at the release.
Yeah.
I remember that. That was fun.
Yeah.
Those were fun days.
Egghead went bankrupt in 2001, and assets were acquired by Amazon.
Of course they were. Of course they were. I can picture the lady from Egghead, and I cannot think of her name off the top of my head.
I remember that.
It'll come to me about 2 in the morning. I'll call you guys.
Yeah. I remember the young lady that used to come in for Corel. Remember they'd hand out the M&Ms?
Yep.
Yep.
Whenever it cried, and WordPerfect would do that too.
Yeah, the Word program, Perfect did it.
The guys
she copied it from Word Perfect because Word Perfect was the one that started M&M's.
Yep. Whenever the demo crashed, they'd hand out candy.
Yep.
Or if you answered a really tricky good question. Good.
Yeah. You'd throw out a little bag of little pocket-sized bag of M&M's.
Yep. Oh yeah, those were the days. I remember talking to one of the guys for Pete's sake, WordStar.
Yeah.
About that, and they were saying, yeah, we're going around the country too. We're doing the same thing. Everybody did it back then.
Remember when companies would do that, and you'd get free software samples and
free not samples. You got the software.
I used to go to Comdex.
Oh yes,
PC Cubed, and I'd come back easily with 10, 15 different packages of software. Because I'd say that I was the president of, you know, the club. And then, oh, well, here, you can raffle this off. And for months on end, we were raffling off different pieces of software to our members to try out. And, I mean, I met Dennis Hayes from Hayes Modems.
Yep.
I met Peter Norton, Bill Gates. I mean, there was a lot of great folks that we met at Comdex back in the day. Like I say, Bill Gates was the most impressive because he sat down with us and just started talking, you know, anything but software. Matter of fact, we brought up about his car at the time because it was in an impound. And then the minute somebody came and sat and started talking about the software, he said, well, I got to go, folks.
Yep, yep. Yeah, but he would talk to you about all kinds of things.
He is such an intelligent man beyond software.
I used to go to Comdex. I used to go to PC Expo. I used to give talks at PC Expo.
Yeah.
And so consequently, I was around before the thing opened and after it closed. And I will tell you this. Back in the day, when you had...
A little carried away.
Yeah, we'll get over it. Back in the day when you were there, they didn't want to carry any of that stuff home. They'd give it to you.
Yep.
I came home with a blimp, a 4-foot-long blimp from a company. I still have that in a box somewhere. All right, that music tells us the first hour of this show is done. A little late. First hour in a minute is done. But we'll be. Don't despair. There's a whole other hour of the longest running computer show coming your way. With Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. Don't go too far. Keep listening to this radio because we will be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are surprisingly hurtling headlong into the second hour
We're easily getting distracted.
Clearly. The second hour, it's the weather. Longest running computer show, you know all this.
We'll blame it on the weather.
Let's blame it on the weather. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Also, I fixed the poll. Now it says 184 million instead of just 84 million. You're welcome, America and the world. I got to see the world because I know there are people who listen to us all over the place.
Scranton, New Jersey, too.
Scranton, New Jersey, Churchville, New York.
You sure it wasn't Scranton, Pennsylvania?
But it could have been Scranton, Pennsylvania. There's also Scrantonsville, so... Again, it's where the IP, where your particular place comes and hits the main stream. So that's how that works. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rick from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Rick?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Dave, I just want to say that I was a lucky winner of a package of Paradox back from the PC Cubed group, I believe.
Whoa.
And, it was one of the greatest things I ever, because I was using it at work, and it was just fantastic. I loved it.
Oh, good. Yeah, that, I just, you know, remember all those days, you know, well, it was a person that came into the store and got me thinking about the old days of Sound Bites and, you know, when we started and going down to Comdex. He actually went down there, too, and brought back a lot of memories, though. And that was the fun days. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. My question is, I've been trying to put Linux on an old 15-plus-year computer, was a Windows 7, and it seems to run okay, Windows Mint. It's very slow on startup. Over 10 minutes. But my real question is, what kind of packages can I use, like anti-spyware or, you know, the antivirus stuff, and especially an ad tracker? Is there something that would be for Linux Mint?
Okay, in terms of antivirus, you need it less, but you need it. So the main one that people use is called ClamAV, C-L-A-M-A-V.
I think that's part of
it. And that's packaged in. You can get it from your repository, the Linux Mint Software Center, I think they call it.
Okay.
Do you know how to do that?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. So there's something that again, I don't use Linux Mint daily, but there's something called a Software Center or something along that line. And if you go there, you will see...
You can do a search.
Well, what you see are categories.
Yep.
Okay, so there's like productivity and like that. So you can either look in there and say, oh, under productivity is an entire Office suite. If that's not installed already, you can install it. Or you can do a search. So if you do a search in that software for ClamAV, you'll find it and you'll be able to install it. And generally, it's a one-button install, and there are tens of thousands of programs in your software center that you can add to the system. And
it's kind of like the Google Play Store and the Mac App Store. You've got your Linux app stores.
Yeah, basically.
Except they're all free.
Yeah, except everything's free. Generally speaking, again, I'm Linux Mint is not my daily driver, but under most of them, you will find the software center under system. Generally speaking,
well, I'm not 100%, you know, forward on Mint. I've just started using it. Is there a better Unix version for
I like
Kubuntu. No, we're not going to no. That's a religious question.
Kubuntu.
And if you want to talk about religion, you bring the beer.
How do you define better?
Yeah. The reality is that Linux Mint is a very well thought of and very much used piece of software. Lots of people love it, lots of people swear by it. It's just not my personal daily driver. And so I'm not as up on where everything is on it as I could be.
Okay.
But that's just my caveat. There are, Linux has only a couple of flavors of actual Linux. There are the Debian-based Linuxes like Ubuntu. There are the Red Hat-based Linuxes. And then on top of that, you have a graphical user interface. Well, Linux Mint... up until recently was Ubuntu-based, and then they just added their own GUI, their own front end, to that, and Mint was the name of the front end. And similarly, you can get Ubuntu Budgie, you can get Ubuntu KDE, you can get Ubuntu with XFCE. So, it's that front end that changes. The underlying system is the same, and it is... Generally speaking, Linux is Linux is Linux. There are a couple of utilities that may be a little different, but Linux is Linux is Linux. And what I don't know well enough is Linux Mint's front end, where it puts all the same stuff. So like I say, they all have a software center. Where that software center is or exactly what it's called, I can't tell you.
Okay. You have one more question?
Yeah.
Different thing. LibreOffice, love it. But I'm getting old, and I can't see when I'm trying to edit things. I'm not sure what the bar is called, but where you go in and you got to put a formula and that kind of stuff. Is there any way to make that bigger?
Oh, that's a lovely question. I think if you change the font on the spreadsheet, it doesn't get bigger.
Control plus?
Well, control plus will increase the size of the screen.
But the interface elements, usually the only way to make those bigger is to make your screen resolution smaller. So if you're running your screen at 14 by 9, lower it to 12 by 8, and everything on screen gets bigger, but then you get less screen.
Right. Okay, well, it's a try, because it's getting... the eyes are really going lately.
Yeah, what I might suggest is start fooling around in the operating system itself. You can change what fonts and what size those fonts are for system fonts. That may do it.
Yeah.
You know how we were talking earlier about stupid answers to questions?
Yeah.
So I just found in the LibreOffice official Ask LibreOffice, someone asked the question, the menu bar font is too small, how do I change it? The answer is, I don't like LibreOffice, but I use Windows 11 and I've changed my screen size.
Then why answer the question?
Don't answer the question if you aren't answering the question.
That's what I was talking about before on a question I asked on a different form.
Yeah.
People don't answer the question that was answered, they...
It's like they have to answer every single thing that's posted, even if they don't know the answer. So now when I'm looking for the answer, oh, hey, great, there's the exact question I have. That's not the answer.
Yeah.
Right. Sorry. This is
we got sidetracked.
Right. But I would try that there.
Great.
So was that under Tools, Options, Basic Fonts?
KDE, though, is a... I know Nick and I both like KDE, and... it looks a lot like Windows. It's easy to use. I mean, that's one that Nick recommended me, and I jumped right into it. And I've tried others. That was the beauty of like I said before about Linux, is, you know, you can try all, you know, I loaded up, I think it was like 3 or 4 different flash drives and put it into the machine and did a test drive, not really installing it, just it ran a little slower, but I was able to try it out and say, that's okay. But then I try another one until I got to KDE, and I just happened to fall on that one. I like it.
Yeah, so Rick, the thing is that you're just starting out with Windows and you don't know where everything is. And you got to do some playing around. So in the system, in the settings, generally it's under something that'll a name like appearance. Okay. Right? So look for that.
There's a lot of good videos too.
Often under like accessories or that sort of thing, you'll find or you know, all of them have an all applications, or you can search the applications so you can find your appearance, and that will let you set the various system fonts. So, you know, what the font size is for the title of a window, right? Or the menus in that window. And I think that one controls the LibreOffice bar there.
You know,
I think.
You know, Nick, it's like your analogy of a car.
Yep.
You know, you drive the car the same way. It's just that they might have moved the buttons here or there. And that's the way it is with Linux. You know, these different flavors. It's all there. But they just rearrange it a little bit, and it's a very good, efficient system.
You've bought a new car. You know how to drive. You just don't know where the radio is. And it takes a little time to learn that. So spend some time playing with it. Don't get frustrated. Think of it as a learning experience.
And like I said,
and like 3 weeks from now, you'll forget you didn't know how to do it.
And check out the YouTube videos. There are so many YouTube videos out there.
So many.
Just telling you how to just set up the basics, along with getting on into other stuff.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you very much, and thanks for that software years and years ago.
You're quite welcome. Glad you enjoyed it.
Thanks, Rick. Have fun. I've been thinking about teaching a course on Linux basics, but the problem with that is there are so many versions of Linux.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I could do the, you know, basics of the Linux command line.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be 99% the same on every version of Windows, and it doesn't change until you get way into the weeds, which we wouldn't do in a beginner's course anyway.
Yeah. Not doing all the recalls of keys.
Right. And but when you're talking about the graphical user interface, every one is just different enough that I would have to have a class on KDE, a class on XFCE, a class on GNOME, a class, you know.
More class fees, then.
It's more class fees. A little more work for me.
Yeah.
So I've been thinking about doing that because I have so much free time nowadays. We'll see. There's just not enough hours in the day anymore. But I've thought about it.
So you should go to Mars. There's 39 more minutes in the day.
That's absolutely true. I would fill them up in about a minute.
That was a question on some trivia thing I was reading the other day. There's a company that makes special watches that are 24 hours and 39 minutes long because the people monitoring the Mars rovers live on Mars time.
Right. Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, that's a good song, Life on Mars, David Bowie.
Exactly.
Yeah, my question is why is that gentleman taking 6 minutes to boot?
Why is what?
The gentleman just
called. Oh, yeah.
That's a long time, even with a mechanical hard drive.
Right. Well, that's a lot of questions. He said it was an old computer, so it may only have 2 gig of RAM.
Mm.
In which case, there's a lot of stuffing. that has to take place, and a lot of moving around, and a lot of swapping out to the hard drive. And if you've got a slow hard drive and low RAM, then you spend most of your time doing swaps, and that is the absolute single slowest thing you can do on a computer.
And if it's an old enough hard drive, it may be starting to fail.
Right.
And so it's retrying every read until it can read it properly. So it takes several tries to read every block.
Right. So
if I was him, I would definitely do a solid state drive.
Right.
He didn't update his memory either, but he definitely would do better with a solid state drive if he doesn't already have one.
Yeah. Right. Even just erasing the disk could help, because then it rewrites the the table.
Right. Well, I mentioned that earlier today about this Asus. It's got 8 gig of RAM, which is fine, but it had a 5,400 RPM hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It took, I think, 7 or 8 hours to boot up, I remember. it certainly felt like that, since most of my other machines were SSDs.
So, I just remember the days when it took us 3 minutes to boot, and now if we don't boot in 30 seconds, we're stressed.
Well, exactly. Now, you know, I replaced it with a solid-state drive, and it flies. It absolutely flies. And I put Linux on it instead of Windows, so it double flies.
Right. Exactly.
But
read that registry.
Yeah, but I'm not honestly surprised that it takes 6 minutes to boot, because A, that may be a small exaggeration, but if you've got a 5,400 RPM hard drive that is not in excellent shape and a slow processor and a little RAM, yes, it can take 6 minutes to boot any operating system.
I was on hold for 20 minutes. My call log says it's 37 seconds.
Yep.
Well, it
there's
felt
that.
Like 20 minutes.
Yeah, there's that. But yeah, I was not as surprised as you were.
Yeah. I would suggest him, if he could do a little bit of updating either to the RAM or to the hard drive. They're both fairly cheap, and he would have a little better experience at least.
Yep. What I would suggest, and I know Rick is still listening, I would suggest keeping the system you've got, playing around with Linux until you're comfortable with it, then replacing the hard drive with an SSD, put Linux on it, fly.
Yeah, but the memory might be an issue with the machine.
Well, the memory will always be an issue.
Yeah, the machine, and since it's such an old machine, how much memory you can actually put in. I'd first go with the hard drive.
And where can you get the memory?
At least swapping to an SSD is going to take less time than it does to a mechanical.
Right. Exactly so. Right.
All right, guys. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too, my friend. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, I didn't really have a problem with it being slow boot, except that I was teaching. And
that could be an issue.
Yeah, and so, you know, I tried always to get there early enough to set myself up and everything else. But sometimes you have to run from one class to another.
Stuff happens,
or you're late. Or you're coming into a class where someone else is teaching and they're late. I don't have 3 minutes of my class time to boot up. I need 8 seconds of my class time to boot up. Normally, like I said, I would try to get there early enough that I could sit out in the hallway and boot it up and be ready for class. Sometimes I just did not have that luxury for various reasons. So, or I had a student in my office that I was, you know, dealing with, and then I got to go to class. Grab my laptop, don't have time to start it up, set it up. Replacing the hard drive, the 5,400 RPM.
See,
which
that's where you should.
You may not remember, but those are real slow.
That's when you should have used one of your minions.
Well, I may have now that you say that.
We all need minions.
Yeah, get this over to the class and get it set up for me.
Well, or I may have used them to change the hard drive.
Yep.
I may have done that, because at that point my arthritis was starting to really work up, and my hands just don't work like they used to.
And you sweat any time you had
getting
into hardware.
Changing a hard drive doesn't bother me as much, because it's really just unplug, plug, throw in a couple screws.
You should have seen him when I opened up the case. Yeah.
Well, now you're talking about playing with the motherboard, and if something goes wrong with that, I got to replace it. So
that was fun.
That was fun. Well, and then what you did with it was he dropped a screw that just went, they turned the machine on and then dropped the screw down it. and the screw just went right down the motherboard, shorting out everything it touched.
Yeah.
All the way down. He just looked at me and said, well, this one was DOA.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No, it didn't die. Yes, it did.
Believe me, I remember. So I was really angry because I couldn't set up my new machine because I had to get a new motherboard. Believe me, this happened. But that's all right. Doesn't matter. The reality is that, if you have the chance, look, more RAM is better. An SSD is better than a spinning hard drive for day-to-day driving, for booting your machine. Whichever one of those you can do, you should. If you can do both, that's better. These days, it is almost impossible to change the processor. On a laptop, you can't do it at all. On many desktops, you can't do it at all.
A lot of desktops are a laptop motherboard in a
case. Well, exactly right. So if you can add RAM at least, if not change your RAM out, but changing your hard drive is at least the number one thing you should do to make your system run faster. Again, as we said, if you've only got 2 gigs of RAM, any operating system is, except Puppy Linux.
It's going to be slow.
It's going to be slow because it's doing a lot of swapping, and swapping is the slowest thing your computer can do. If you have a second drive that you designate as the swap drive, that speeds up swapping, but still not to the point where it's super fast. So you need to be aware of that. I've got currently my desktop is 32 gig, and I haven't seen a swap yet. So, things are moving along at a decent pace now, and that's all right. So, if you're building a machine or looking for a new machine, spec out a minimum, and I don't care what your operating system is. A minimum of 8 gig and 16 gig is better. A minimum of a quarter terabyte hard drive, half a terabyte is better. And absolutely an SSD at the very least. And if you can afford it and your machine will take it, 2 SSDs. One to run your operating system, which can be smaller, and one to put your data on, which can be bigger.
Apple tried that, like 2017 or like 2019 or so. They called it a fusion drive, except it was a small SSD for speed and a big spinning drive for capacity.
Yeah, it's a little different from what I'm talking about.
Because big SSDs used to be ridiculously expensive. And so now we're getting to that point 5, 6, 7 years later where they're all starting to die.
Yep.
And because it's a RAID, it's two drives acting as one volume. If either one dies, you lose all your data on both. And yeah. We've had a few. It's usually the spinning drive that dies, but we had one the other day where it was the SSD that died.
RAID, look, you get RAID 5, RAID 10, mm-hmm. Okay. But RAID 0, RAID 1, RAID 2, they're not useful.
Scary RAID.
Scary RAID. They're useful. They're just scary.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, multiple drives are good. Multiple fast drives are better. And so, if you're speccing out a new machine, don't skimp on the things that will make your life easier. Any operating system, and it could be Windows. I don't care. Any operating system runs faster with more RAM. Any operating system runs faster with an SSD. Any operating system runs faster with 2 SSDs. So go as far as you can in my Mary Oldsmobile and get what you can get and move happily through your computing experience. Don't skimp if you're buying a new machine. And I know a lot of people are getting that last-minute pre-tariff computer, so don't skimp here. It won't save you anything in the long run. All right, we're going to take a quick break. But don't go too far. Stick close to the radio and listen in, because we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. I'll read some security news while you call in. Many T-Mobile customers weren't particularly happy about being forced into using T-Life, which is the go-to app for almost everything. And now, customers may have discovered another reason not to like the app. The T-Life app features a screen recording tool that's toggled on by default. As the name implies, the tool records your screen while you are using the app. In light of recent iffy recording tools such as Microsoft's Recall AI feature in Windows, seeing a feature that records the contents of your screen is bound to raise privacy concerns. As expected, there's been some blowback, though T-Mobile does let you opt out of the setting, if you know about it. A T-Mobile spokesrobot defended the feature, saying it was designed to improve the user experience. The option shows up on both iPhones and Android phones. Thousands of home and small business routers manufactured by Asus are being affected with a stealthy backdoor that can survive reboots and firmware updates. Security firm Gray Noise said it has tracked roughly 9,000 devices around the world that have been backdoored in the ongoing campaign. That number continues to grow. The only way for router users to determine whether their devices are infected is by checking the SSH settings in the configuration panel for digital certificates and any SSH activity on port 53282 that the user didn't create. To remove the backdoor, infected users should remove the key in the port setting. Users of any router brand should always ensure their devices receive security updates in a timely manner. The Chinese APT41 hacking group uses a new malware named Tough Progress that exploits Google Calendar for command and control operations, hiding malicious activity behind a trusted cloud service. The campaign was discovered by Google's Threat Intelligence Group, which identified and dismantled attacker-controlled Google Calendar and workspace infrastructure and introduced target measures to prevent such abuse in the future. A newly discovered Go-based Linux botnet malware named PumaBot, or I suppose PumaBot, is brute-forcing SSH credentials on embedded IoT devices, mostly surveillance cams. To defend against botnet threats, upgrade IoTs to the latest available firmware, change default credentials, put them behind firewalls, and keep them in separate networks isolated from valuable systems. Or just don't use them in the first place. You know, the usual. And once you've done all of that, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
That's a huge issue in the Internet of Things.
Yeah, IoT is the Internet of Things.
Internet of Things. So security cameras and doorbells and nanny cams. Make sure whatever you buy can be updated. Because a lot of the really cheap stuff can't.
Right.
And automatic updates are best. So you don't have to worry about it, but you should still check. I get badges like every couple of days. There's an update for your Eero. Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
I've got dozens of customers with Eero, so I get all of these updates.
Right.
But, yeah, a lot of the really cheap, especially security cameras, you can't update them. So when there's a problem found, and there always is, now the bad guys can watch your camera footage.
Right.
Or the worst one I found was that the URL for the camera had the serial number of the camera embedded in it. And somebody found that out when they returned a camera, and then a few weeks later started getting new video images from the camera that had been sold again, and their software was still set up to read that serial number.
Right.
And so he started trying random serial numbers in the URL and found random people's cameras. And
yeah.
And tried to report it to the company, but you know, a lot of times they're gone. So company will start up, sell a million cameras, and then disappear, so they don't have to worry about it. Then you have no way of updating your device and fixing the holes that are in it. So make sure you use a better name brand camera that can get updates, and be aware that eventually it will get too old to be supported. Planned obsolescence. You know, usually that's 7 to 10 years.
Often sooner.
So after updates or after problems are found, after software goes out of update, then they're not going to get fixed anyway. So even if you do have a name brand thing, if it's too old, it's not going to get that update.
I had I won a Woot bag of crap, and in it was a little box of 4 smart plugs.
Mm-hmm.
I say smart plugs. They weren't very.
Yeah.
They only would connect to an open network. No, thank you.
Yeah.
The company that made them was already out of business.
You don't have an
no, thank you.
You don't have an open guest network for plausible deniability?
Yeah.
I didn't do that. I have an open network.
Well, if you have an Amazon device, by the way.
Sidewalk.
Amazon Sidewalk is an open network that lets anyone within 900 feet, because it's low energy Bluetooth, connect to your network and use it.
It's so you can put a sensor in your mailbox to know when the mail comes.
Yeah, that's the reason. But anybody can connect to it. And if they're using the other one, it's like half a mile. Yeah, you've already got an open network.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an Amazon. Not every Amazon device. It has to be a Sidewalk compatible device.
And because there was so much of an outcry about it, I think it's quietly disappeared.
It's quietly disappeared, but you may have bought one. So I would be careful. What are we pointing to?
Somebody's requesting access to our television.
Are they?
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Decline. Block.
There's no mouse on a television. How do you...
is it... Excuse us, folks.
It's not a touchscreen, no. There's a little joystick something or other in the center.
Yeah, okay. I'm just going to sit there.
Is there somebody else in this... Yeah, there's somebody else in the studio.
All right, so maybe
they're trying
to
join the wrong monitor.
Right.
I swear, you just talk about open networks. Is this TV on an open network?
I hope not. But I hope not.
As a suggestion, if you do get IoT devices, connect them to your guest network.
Yep.
Because if the routers are built properly, the guest network cannot access your main network.
Right.
They can only access the internet. So when the bad guy finds this security camera, they'll still be able to see into your house, but they can't use that as a...
Wait a minute. That's that middle one is us.
Oh, that bottom middle one is us?
Yeah, see, there's my hand.
Oh.
There's nobody in the...
Has it been up there the whole show? Maybe it was
previous... No, it just popped up recently. Matter of fact, it just refreshed again.
This is great. All right, so let's go back to that. If you have a guest network... First, if your router does not allow you to have a guest network that is separate from your main network, get a different router. Secondly, set up your guest network so that if you have guests...
Grease teacher.
You can use them. You can use that network for that. You can also use it for your Internet of Things devices, because it will then connect to the network, but not your main network. So it can't get to your computers. It can't get to your televisions. You know, put everything you want private on one network, and then the guest network is public stuff. Stuff you don't mind people getting into, which is basically nothing. They will still be able to use, your bandwidth.
That's usually all guests want. They want to get to the internet and check their mail.
Right. But they won't be able to get at any of your stuff. So, for example, I had a friend of mine just show up at my door. He's traveling around the United States in a van thing that he's converted. It's the mystery machine, I guess. And he's traveling around the country, and he showed up at my door. And, you know, he spent a day or two, and we got online together and did stuff together. I put him on my guest network.
Yeah.
That way he could have full access to the internet, do whatever he wanted to do, did not have access to any of my stuff.
To your intranet.
To my intranet. And if I really needed to, if I did not trust him, right, after he left, I could change the guest network password without having to change my internal network password, which meant at the time my wife, my daughter,
somebody
6 or 18 mm-hmm. or 34 of her closest okay, friends, although I put them on the, I eventually convinced my daughter that they should go on the guest network as well. So yeah, if you have kids, a guest network is the single best thing you can possibly have. And so, yeah, you would want to do that. And again, if your router doesn't do a guest network, and you would be able to tell by looking at the manual or at the very least the box that it comes with, and that will tell you what it does. And if not, you can find generally the online manual, and it will tell you what it does. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. What's up, Andy?
Hi, guys. In line with your guest network stuff, I found out the hard way that my Honeywell home thermometer will not connect to a guest network.
Well, really?
Yeah, somehow it knows it's a guest network, and it will not connect.
Wow.
I call customer service, and they said, oh, no, it has to be connected through the primary network, but it's not a security thing because it only goes out and it doesn't come in and da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
I wasn't real pleased with that, but and they were right because the minute I put in my 29-character password, it connected, yeah, and it's fine.
Yeah. That is the one thing that annoys me
so
about NPass. Is when you make a 150-character password, and then you have to put it into your television.
Yeah. So what it probably was doing, the thermostat was looking on your network for your furnace. And since it's on the guest network, it can't see it. So that makes sense. But it is annoying.
The thermostat is connected by a 5-wire cable
directly
to the furnace.
It may have also been looking over the network for it, too.
Yeah, it supposedly all it's doing is going out to pick up the external temperature and talk to the servers at Honeywell.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, it should be on the guest network, and it shouldn't need your main network.
Yeah.
But how the hell does it even know?
It must be trying to find another local device and can't. Mm-hmm.
It's got to be trying to find another local device.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. The other hiccup I had was I have grandchildren with electronic devices. There's a surprise. And so I'm giving them the guest network and password, which is much simpler than the main one. And they get it into their iPads and iPhones and whatnot. And the next time they come over, it won't remember it. You have to re-put it in, and sometimes it doesn't connect and this and that. So we just said, okay, fine. We put them on the primary, and it goes through and it remembers it, and it logs right in when they walk in the door, and they're happy.
There should be a setting to remember the password that's typed.
I got the two littlest ones have Amazon tablets. We put in the password and the account and the password, and I've got it written down so I know what it is. and I go to put it in, and it doesn't want to connect. If I put in the main network and the big password, it connects and it remembers that the next time they're here. And
those are what kind of tablets?
The Amazon Kids 10-inch with the fancy bumper thing around it. And
yeah.
That's supposedly so you can't break the screen, which they managed to do. I've replaced those at least every 2 years. For about 3 replacements now.
Yeah. That's weird.
You get one free replacement, and they've used the free replacement. It's amazing.
Yeah. What is the name of your guest network?
Does it have guest in the name? Maybe that's how it knows.
Yes.
Try taking that out.
Well, the main router is my initials dash home,
mm-hmm.
and the guest network is my initials dash home dash guest, or I think it maybe just my initials dash guest.
Yeah, maybe it sees the name as guest, and that's how it says no, I can't be on a guest network.
I don't know.
But that's
care.
Nuts. I'm sorry, but
yeah,
that's nuts.
And my only IoT thing in the house is my thermostat. So.
Yeah, that's a little nuts. All the way around, that's nuts. You should be able to connect anybody at any time to a guest network, and it shouldn't matter. The only difference is, as Steve said, if it's looking for some other device on the main network, because the two networks are completely separate. So if it's looking for some other device on the main network, yes, absolutely, you can't get to it. Like, for example, if you have...
Port 443 is blocked. I just found a thing on Honeywell. On the guest network, port 443 is blocked because that's Windows file sharing. And 443. Ah! Port 443. Google port 443 now.
Yeah. So if you open port 443, your guest network should work fine for all of those.
HTTPS. Well, that's interesting because it can't block HTTPS on a guest network.
That's weird.
Yeah. Because HTTP is port 80.
Right. Everything uses S now. Everything uses HTTPS.
Yeah. So what's the... March of 25 is when this tech note was published.
Okay,
at Honeywell.
Make sure your guest network opens port 443. Interesting. All right, thanks, Andy.
No problem.
The other thing I've run into now and then, especially with some game consoles... is that they require 2.4 megahertz.
Gigahertz,
thank you.
Enright disease?
Yeah. And most routers now prefer 5 gigahertz because it's less crowded.
Right.
But 5 gigahertz doesn't go through walls as well. But they do 2.4, 5, and now Wi-Fi 7 uses 6 gigahertz. So what I found in several different routers is you have to temporarily turn off the 5 gigahertz band so that the devices will connect and remember 2.4 gigahertz.
Right.
Because when it tries to connect, it's only the router is saying, oh, hi, yeah, I'm here. Here's the 5 gigahertz channels. And no, I can't use that.
Well, and that's one of the things I like about my mesh network.
Mm-hmm.
I have when my father-in-law passed, we inherited his television, which I believe was originally owned by Fred Flintstone. But it was, you know, plasma display. It was one of the very early ones.
Mm.
It had trouble connecting at all. But once I changed out my router for a mesh network, it connects fine. It connects great. And the same thing with the small television that I got my wife for the kitchen.
And I just found another tech note from Honeywell with that same thing. Turn off your 5 gigahertz, let it connect to 2.4.
There you go. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's annoying, but it makes a lot of sense. So if you've got the capability, create a guest network. You can put a separate password on the guest network. You do not have to make it an open network. But it means that if someone comes over and wants to use your systems, use your network on their computing devices, they can do that without endangering your stuff in any way.
And they might not intentionally want to endanger you, but maybe they are infected by some network virus.
Exactly. Trust no one. Trust no one. The X-Files was correct.
The easiest way to infect somebody's network is to drop a flash drive in the parking lot.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
People are going to pick it up. They're going to plug it in to see what's on it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did that. I worked with the Tiger team for a while. We did that.
I think that's how Stuxnet got into the Iranian nuclear facilities.
Yep. We did that more than once. So
I see that on TV, too. And they just plug it right into their computer. No! Security people, they would have an isolated sandboxed computer for that.
Yeah, a separate laptop or something that's not even hooked up to the internet.
It's in the network. Well, that's because you're stupid.
Yeah.
Because every single time it annoys me.
Plot device.
You know, because what they do is they give the thumb drive to the tech wizard in their group.
Well, let's see what's on it.
And that tech wizard plugs it into his or her own desktop. No. No one does that.
It's not done.
No one who's a tech wizard does that.
Not in real life.
Right.
I like watching police procedurals, and I just asked a question about one of them on how realistic it is, and the weapons and the training and the vehicles, and someone posted back, that's probably the most unrealistic police show ever. They would never do something like that for real.
Yep.
It's like in the olden days, they used to watch Quincy.
Right.
Oh. And someone once said back in the 80s that the real L.A. County coroner was more likely to steal your gold fillings than he was to dig for the truth.
In any profession.
Yeah, you can't watch a show based on your profession.
Right. So, but if you have a network, set up the guest network and set a password on it, open the ports that you need to open, you know, you need to be aware, and you need to not trust. And there's nothing wrong with saying to somebody, here's the password to my guest network. 99% of the time, they won't care. And if they do care, you might want to wonder why. So be very careful. Be very aware. Get that guest network set up. That's your homework for the week, children. Pencils down. Your homework for the week is to set up your guest network properly with a separate entirely separate password. Not one you've ever used before or will use again anywhere else ever.
And I've had a lot of people tell me, I don't need a guest network. I'll just give them my main password. Well, you don't know what's on their computer. They may have an infection.
That's exactly
right. Once they join your network, all of your stuff could get infected too.
That's right. But if they're on the guest network and it is separated from your main network, then that cannot happen.
And most of the time, the guests can't see other guests either.
Yeah, in a lot of networks, that's true.
Yeah, which is good.
Right. So you can't do it for a LAN party, but pretty much for everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody do LAN parties
you'd
anymore?
Run Ethernet for LAN parties.
I remember
we do LAN parties. Everyone brings a computer. It takes us 3 hours to set up the stupid network, and we were all computer people.
and we were using Apple Talk.
Yep.
Back in the day.
And the 16-year-old kid would always beat everybody else. It was the six of us against him, and he'd still beat us.
Yeah, exactly right. Been there, done that. Be aware that there's a lot of security you're not taking advantage of, and you should. If you have anybody who's on your network.
And you don't have to be a target. The bad guys will grab anybody.
Right.
They send out a million emails. They'll send out a billion emails.
It's all robotics now. It's all botnets.
Yep.
And it's all automated. None of it is somebody targeting you. It's somebody targeting everybody.
Yeah.
And whether you like it or not, you're part of everybody.
You just had a story about security camera getting infected as a botnet.
Yes.
DVRs.
TVRs.
TV DVRs get infected as botnets.
Light bulbs.
Yep.
Light.
Just enough smarts in it.
Bulbs. All right. That music tells us that we are done for another week. Excellent show. Really interesting questions this week. I want to thank everybody who called in, particularly people with extra information. We love that here. I want to thank Dave Enright for staying awake for a significant portion of the show. I want to thank Steve Ray for not being as Steve Ray as he has been in the past. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the look. I also want to appreciate these guys for putting up with my abuse all of these years. 35
lousy years.
35 lousy. Two of the best years of my life.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.